Good morning. Now, some of you probably remember the late 60s, early 70s in particular. There were a lot of us, a lot of young people, who were looking to attain some kind of extraordinary experience that would transform us and provide answers to all our questions about the meaning of life. And somehow this morning, I guess driving here, it's not directly related, sort of. I remembered an experience I had. I was driving with a friend of mine at that time, and we saw a woman who had gotten a flat standing by her car. So we passed the car and pulled over and came back and helped her change her tire. And when we were done, she offered us some money. And my friend says, "No, no, no, we don't take money. We're holy men." So, I think there was some idea in all this that we wanted to be holy men and women. So for a lot of us, the focus of this quest was on the use of mind-expanding drugs like mescaline, peyote, LSD. And the idea we were looking for was that these drugs would blow our minds, as we used to say. And that was the expression that was used to describe the experience. And then, you know, we had a number of characters on the scene that a lot of us emulated. And one in particular was Ram Dass. He had been to India, had a lot of wild experiences. He became very popular. And he was sort of a pretty cool guy. Especially he had all these wonderful stories. So he was one of many figures that a lot of us at the time were, you know, in love with. Baba Ram Dass, what a cool guy he was. And I don't know if you remember the history, but he was also connected with Timothy Leary. They both worked at Harvard. They both got into the LSD world, propagating use of LSD. The experiences that drugs produced were really temporary and unfulfilling and left a lot of people with a sort of depression, in the sense that they had held out these high expectations that somehow, in some dramatic way, they were going to change their life. And that didn't happen. So this dream of becoming a holy man, holy woman, fizzled out. And so the result of this, the next phase of this search, was filled by the influx of transcendental Eastern religions to this country. And again, a lot of us got involved in these religions, looking again for some kind of transcendental experience. One of the names that we used was enlightenment. And in our way, I think that a lot of us believed that these religions would blow our minds and that they would provide the key to the secrets of the universe. One of the key things about this, though, was that these experiences were always about the person. You know, it was always about me. Am I going to get this? And less so, there was any kind of collective movement. Not that there wasn't, but there much less so. It was a pretty selfish pursuit. But again, these ideas of enlightenment, you know, the thoughts that we had about what enlightenment was, involved a lot of magical and wishful thinking. So there's a 19th century koan in the Gateless Gate, also known as the Mumun Khan, and it's called Ordinary Mind is the Way. And here's the koan. Joshu asks Nansen, "What is the way?" And Nansen replies, "Ordinary mind is the way." And Joshu says, "Should I try and seek after it?" And Nansen replies, "If you try for it, you become separated from it." "But how can I know the way unless I try for it?" Joshu persisted. And Nansen said, "The way is not a matter of knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion, not knowing is confusion. When you have really reached the true way beyond doubt, you will find it as vast and endless as space. How can it be talked about on the level of right and wrong?" And this is followed by this poem. 100 flowers in spring, the moon in autumn, the cool wind in summer, and winter's snow. If your mind is not clouded with things, you are happy at any time. And so the koan's telling us that Zen is really for the simple-minded. It pulls the rug out from all of these lofty and fanciful ideas about transcendence, about enlightenment. What it's saying is that God, that Buddha, that insight, enlightenment, are nothing special. That they are ordinary. But ordinary in the true sense. And this is the same thing that Suzuki Roshi was pointing at when he discussed beginner's mind. Very simple. Nothing special. Nothing extraordinary. Beginner's mind. And no matter how far we got in our practice, no matter how deep we got into our practice, only beginner's mind. And so usually, though, when we use the word ordinary, we think of it as meaning pedestrian, unimaginative, boring, unimportant. It's a word that is generally used to express a negative. You know, none of us would be flattered if our friend said, "Carl, you know, you're a pretty ordinary guy." Or a child, our son or daughter, said to us, "Hey, Dad, you know, you're a pretty ordinary father." And yet worse is if your lover rolled over and looked into your eyes and said, "Honey, you're pretty ordinary." So in reality, and this is a fundamental teaching of Zen, if we are fully present to this moment without judgments, evaluations, or comparisons, that is, things just as they are, everything that we think of as ordinary becomes alive and poignant. Right? Anything that's ordinary, like a garbage can laying on its side, rocking back and forth in the breeze, right? That's really beautiful. If we don't have categories for it, right? We just see it in its ordinary beauty. A squirrel eating an acorn. It happens all the time, particularly this kind of time of the year when the acorns are all falling. How many times do we just walk by this kind of experience and don't even notice it? Right? It's ordinary. It's not special. It's not exciting. But we don't have a category for it. That also is beautiful. It's beautiful to see that squirrel sitting there. I was walking and passing over a bridge that went over a stream. And there was a blue heron standing in the stream. And his neck, they have long necks, his neck went up and he turned and he looked where I was. So I stopped and was just tried to be as totally quiet as I could. And eventually, he was not concerned with my presence and he went back to just standing every now and then, going his face into the water, his bill into the water, and catching a little fish. But it was beautiful. And I thought, how many times would I have just walked by this little ordinary thing standing there? It was beautiful. But a lot of times I would walk past because there were no fireworks. There wasn't a crowd of people saying, "Hey, look at this." We meet God in the ordinary, and we see that heaven is right in front of us. We see the beauty and the truth of the ordinary, untainted with any expectations or desires that we have about it. Right? Just this. Just this. Now, haiku is an art form that celebrates this truth. And there's a poet named Patricia Donegan who wrote a book, Haiku Mind. And this is a quote from her book. "Haiku is about ordinary life. Just that. Nothing special. There is absolutely no separation between the mundane and the sacred. Things are just as they are. No difference between the mundane and the sacred. The difference is trouble that the mind makes. We look for the sacred and ignore the mundane. That's because the mind is a troublemaker. Things are just as they are." So here's a couple of haikus which come from that book. And the first one is by Tetsuko Hoshino. "Beautiful lines of green run through the summer dishes." Right? That's ordinary. Beautiful lines of green run through the summer dishes. But if we don't pass it by, if we stop to appreciate it, it's beautiful. It's alive. House cleaning day, hanging a shelf at his own home, a carpenter. Yeah, and you know, no bells and whistles, just the simple act of a carpenter in his own home, hanging a shelf. And then another one is the piercing cold. In our bedroom, stepping on my dead wife's comb. The piercing cold in our bedroom, stepping on my dead wife's comb. And this last one is by Sugita. Moonlight through thin clothes to naked skin. Moonlight through thin clothes to naked skin. So by ordinary, what we mean is that there is no need to add or take away from what's going on. To appreciate the truth of this, we must learn to pay attention and live fully in each moment. And when we live fully in each moment, we are no longer in a hurry. We no longer pass life by. We become happy with slowness, with plainness, with the child licking a lollipop, the sound of the rising wind in the trees, our mate caressing our forehead. Just this. Roshi John Tarrant, who's written a number of books about Zen, says, "There is no objection to the states of mind that arise, ordinary, painful, or otherwise. Then they have their moment and move along like clouds in the trade winds, and there is no flaw in the thinking or in the moment that is taking place." So to conclude, if you are looking for something special, some big whoop, well then I think it's probably a good time to stop Zen practice or give up that looking. Otherwise, we allow ourselves to become simple-minded. If we give up that looking, we allow ourselves to become simple-minded, to have a beginner's mind, and just simply be present to each moment exactly as it is. And if we live in this way, we will have no use for words like enlightenment, God, heaven. But you will have the living and vibrating experience of living in just that moment. Dogen wrote, "Those who see the worldly life as an obstacle to the Dharma see no Dharma in everyday actions. They have not yet discovered that there are no everyday actions outside of the Dharma, just as things are, just as they are." So let us ordinary folks return to Zazen.